if I could go back 20 years, I would hit it a hell of a lot harder.
You could have bought more land, so to speak, like a farmer would
say. I would have doubled down. So sometimes you aren't quite sure what's going to work. And there's a lot of failed businesses that wanted to do .com stuff, right? That's where you look at trends, you look at opportunities, and then you still have to execute. You still have to figure out where the opportunity is and not run out of cash and create enough value that customers keep coming back and coming back.
Hey now, this is Dan Eberhardt, and I am the host of this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. My business partner and little brother and I, Terry, we started this show to bring you the incredible conversations we're fortunate enough to have with the amazing folks in our network. These episodes will elevate your mindset, they'll motivate you, they'll inspire you and inform you in such a way that you can be successful going forward in the agricultural space. So let's get growing our future together. Hey now, thanks so much for joining us on the Growing the Future podcast. Today we have a really special episode with the hero of the story and a mentor of mine, Joe Dales. How are you doing there today, Joe?
Great, Dan. Pleasure to be here. And likewise, I'm always impressed with what you and Terry and your family are doing. So happy to be here.
Thanks so much. We're going to cover some very interesting ground here because we're talking to an entrepreneurial ninja or Jedi and someone who has been a great influence on me and my brother. And Joe, your mission is to help farmers be more profitable and productive by encouraging them to adopt innovative practices. So you've been a hero to a lot of different folks, which we'll drill down on, but you're the co-founder of Farms.com and AgCareers.com. If you don't know that name in Western Canadian agriculture or even nationwide, where have you been? Joe, you've been involved in over 40 innovative products and services in your career. It's probably a lot more since that bio is written. I can imagine it's only like multiplying by tens as we go. Involved with a great deal of companies in various capacities, like the board of directors, board of advisors. Still love it if you come on our board of advisors if you're not too busy. But today, you are the co-founder and president of Agra and Food Innovation at Roundhouse Accelerator in London, Ontario, where you guys help startups get off the ground. It's like that Tesla rocket that's going up, and then it comes back down, and there's very little explosion. The way this show is going to flow today, we're going to walk with Joe on a bit of a chronological journey, but the way that's going to be set out is three key questions we're going to pivot around today, Joe. It's going to be, who has been a hero to you? So that's sort of your beginnings, coming up in the industry, being an employee, transitioning to entrepreneur. Who has been a hero to you? What was their biggest impact? What's the biggest difference they made? And what's the biggest insights you got from them? And then the second part, well, who have you been a hero to? As a leader, as an entrepreneur, you're functioning in a space where you're a hero to your staff and your customers and your shareholders and all the stakeholders involved. So you know you're at the center of that, but you're transitioning, thirdly, into a very cool spot in life. I'm kind of envious and I want to get there and I want to be with you. It's where have you made someone else a hero in their life and their story, which is really the story of Roundhouse Accelerator now, where you're helping these people become heroes in their own business. Oh, Joe, we got lots to talk about, and it's going to be really amazing. But let's start with...
Thanks.
Yeah, let's start with your beginnings, your humble beginnings to where you are now. But let's go, like, coming up on the farm, being an employee, and encapsulate all that with who has been a hero to you.
Yeah, good questions. And I think for me, our family, it's probably the same as yours, had the biggest influence. Father and mother and grandparents and so on. They encouraged me to educate myself. And so I went to Western. And just growing up, I think I've did a lot around the farm and got my education and kind of fell into agribusiness. And the first few bosses you had, co-workers, they all kind of inspire you to push it a little bit. And I think customers as well. I started with Pfizer and calling on retailers, and some of them were just tremendous entrepreneurs, and they coach you because you come out of university, you're pretty green. As long as you try to take good care of them, and all those pieces kind of came together. Lots of heroes, lots of influencers. They kept giving me more and more responsibility and asking harder business questions. I had a science degree and married that up with an MBA just because business is hard to begin with. And I saw where 9 out of 10 startups fail. And so I thought, all right, you got to be in the top 10%. Otherwise, it's going to be hard. And it's hard even when you have all the skills and experience.
That's an interesting marriage. Science degree and MBA, do those overlap? Are they complementing? Does that rewire your brain in ways that's really useful in business?
Well, you know, you're a business guy, right? You better be good at financial statements. You better be good at a whole bunch of different things. The science, I think, helps ground you with being good at math and being good at data. So the business side, I enjoyed it. And then I got better at finance and marketing. And I think it was helpful. So yeah, I had some really good mentors. Peter Hannum, for people in Ontario and Eastern Canada, was a great mentor. And I worked for a large company and then I went and joined him. And working for a small company is totally different because all of a sudden, cash flow and tying up investment is a bigger issue. So that was good.
I'm curious about your family roots. When you talk about your family being a hero in this story, what sort of core values did you adopt from your family?
They're like everybody's, at least in agriculture, helping the family. Everybody works. Finish the job that you start. Be a person of your word. And my parents were very generous people and helped out, made sure the community were involved in the community and things like that. So we tried to live like that. Probably the same stuff that you guys were brought on. I think that's why I like agriculture so much, because the culture is one of helping people and you're happy when the harvest is done and the crops are off and we all had another good year and everybody's safe because nobody, you don't want anybody getting hurt because they've pushed it too hard.
Absolutely. That's a big thing in our ag community because it's pretty dangerous work for sure. And I've been considering core values recently in the context of how do we tune them and make sure that they're useful vehicles when we go to hire somebody. So one of our original core values was diversification of Eberhardt Farms. But 5 years later, I'm wondering, does that fit like it used to? Should we revisit that? And what if some of the new cultural nuances that we have in the company is more suited to when you go to hire somebody in the entrepreneurial operating system, for example, it's that filter of, do they get your core values, which could be discipline, accountability, transparency, functional things that you can use to figure out if people are a good fit in your company. That's a really big deal. That's how you see the world and culture trumps strategy every single time.
You want both. It's not an either or. And I think you guys are very innovative and I think you value initiative. Those are a couple of things that you want to stir in there. You don't want people just showing up and expecting you to do everything for them. And I think as your business matures, you'll be happy when people surprise you with good ideas that weren't just yours. And you can grow your team and enjoy seeing that growth.
Absolutely. One of the biggest things I was curious going into this interview was, how did you transition from being an employee to entrepreneur? Like what? I never heard this story. How did that come to be that you got into all these businesses? I mean,
my last job, career working for somebody, was with Cyanamid Crop Protection. And I had the opportunity to launch Pursuit and Odyssey with a guy named Kevin Hamill. And at that time, it was the Pursuit Smart or Smart Canola, which became eventually Clearfield. And our partnership was with Pioneer Hybrid and Proven Seed UGG. So that was a real tremendous technological advancement and had huge success with it. And so I knew I could always get another job. And about the same time, I saw this thing called the internet emerging. And I've always tried to find where innovation and agriculture come together. It's dangerous, but there's opportunity in there for early stage companies and you want to pick up on growth and trends. And I thought this technology had just huge opportunities so that if you were in Saskatchewan, you had access to the knowledge in the library and the markets of the world versus waiting for a Western producer to come in every week, a week late, or a radio. And I talked my wife, Sandy, into moving to London and we had no customers, no money, no products, but we were going to try to innovate. And because I had the footprint in agriculture and food and the network and the relationships, that's where we were going to try to grind away and build out a company. And I met four students and a prof at the University of Guelph that were building these websites. My partner, Darren, is still with a shareholder in farms.com. And he and Sandy, my wife, built the first agcareers.com website. And that kind of got us started. And then we consulted and hustled and built the company to the point where now it's farms.com and Better Farming Magazine, which they brought to Western Canada, and Ag Careers and Careers in Food. And we have the agriville.com website, which keeps bubbling in the West as well. And offices in Canada and the US, Europe and Asia. So pretty neat company. And for 20 years, I had been pretty much exclusive to building the business. And a couple of years ago, wanted to see what the future, what was I going to do? And I thought, hey, here's an opportunity to work with some new people and do some new things. And I've always liked working with early stage companies. So we put a succession plan in place and I jumped out from my day to day. I'm still on the board and still a major shareholder at farms.com, and talked to the staff a fair bit, but was able to free up my time to work with some of the early stage companies. This risk was a lot less dramatic than the one 20 years ago when left a big, great job to start. And farmers didn't even have computers. Like nobody even knew what the internet was.
I was going to ask you, like, ask Jeeves.
That was risky.
Was that you guys? Remember that? Ask Jeeves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember all those. Yeah. No, we had one called Caffeine, which was a web directory. It was a Canadian agri-food information, blah, blah. Tech guy coming up with Caffeine. But yeah, I wish I was a little smarter. I would have invented Google. But at the time, you aren't quite sure what's going to work and what doesn't work. But that's where you just experiment and try things and be patient. The things like Ag Careers, it wasn't a great business model at the start. But then all of a sudden, as we were able to take the price point up and get more jobs on it, then it became add more bells and whistles. It became a nice business.
Were you able to see where the internet was going at that time? Like 98 is a long time ago. The internet was literally in its infancy at that point.
I think I did, but if I could go back 20 years, I would hit it a hell of a lot harder.
You could have bought more land, so to speak, like a farmer would
say. I would have doubled down. So hindsight, so sometimes you aren't quite sure what's going to work. And there was a lot of failed businesses that wanted to do .com stuff, right? That's where you look at trends, you look at opportunities, and then you still have to execute. You still have to figure out where the opportunity is and not run out of cash and create enough value that customers keep coming back and coming back. So easy to say, but hard to do.
I think what I love about talking to you as an entrepreneur is you actually come from a totally different place than almost everybody else, where you have incredible perspective on the kind of business we're running. And you're kind of like, well, it's a good business. I've been there, but.
When you bounce ideas off me, I look at it with a totally different perspective. You're just getting started, but I see what you can become. And that's why I'm confident that you and Terry are on a good path. You just need to just keep building it and let it mature. Because very seldom, you use the baseball analogy, you're not going to step up to the plate and start knocking out home runs. You just need to get on base. You just need to get hit by pitch, survive, and scratch across the first few runs and not quit. And that's what I try to encourage with most founders is, all right, you're paying the price now. This is why farmers and founders are pretty closely aligned. If you've survived 10, 15, 20 years as a farmer, you tip your hat to your neighbor because you know how bloody hard it is to make everything work.
Exactly.
Get a crop in the ground, get a crop off, get it priced so that you're profitable and you can cash flow, because it's hard. And it's the same with founders. Founders know other founders have paid the price and that it's not easy. And starting a business, 9 out of 10 fail. So why do you expect it to be easy?
Mentally, I've been in that 90% ever since we started, but we're still the 1 in 10 alive. It's incredible. And rounding some sort of corner. But the question I always ask myself is, if you knew at the beginning of that journey how bloodied your feet would be and how torn your clothing would be and how broken in spirit you might be getting anywhere close to the summit, let alone base camp, would you even start? But I don't think you could give up the journey for the world. I think that's what it's all about in the end.
Yeah, and I think that's where you have to enjoy the steps and find what your motivation is and trust that the hard times are going to lead to something good. You have to have that kind of confidence, I guess, or faith, or else you wouldn't start another one. You just get a job and be satisfied. But most founders aren't satisfied. Most farmers aren't satisfied. They know they can do a little bit better and we'll take on more land. We'll do this. We'll do this. We'll try this. And so I think that's why I like our sector so much, because we're surrounded by great entrepreneurs and everybody's got stories on those near-death experiences, right? So that was a bad idea. It cost me a lot of money. Not going to do that again.
When I think about, Joe, who you've been a hero to, I can honestly say, you know, we were doing this exercise in strategic coach yesterday. You came up as who has been a hero to me, because you came out of nowhere and you had the time and the patience to really listen. You understood, and I knew you had listened because of your response. The information in your responses was such that this man has listened to me. He's been there. He's very encouraging. And that had a big impact, a big difference in my life. And I've always turned to you for some sage wisdom and advice over the years. And I'm excited about what you're doing with the RH Accelerator. But tell me, when you're running these companies, what is it like to be in the middle of all these stakeholders and everybody that needs so much from you as a leader?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. I think, and it's a black hole, right? There's never enough. And it's a challenge, right? Because everybody's different. People are different. They all have different motivations. It makes you happy when you've got a team that is driving things forward or become the next leaders. And I get a nice feeling when I see some of our staff at farms.com on things like LinkedIn announcing events or doing things. And you know how far they've grown, right? When you first met them, they were pretty inexperienced. And now they're becoming the leaders of the industry. So you want to nurture that. It's the same as agriculture, right? You want to nurture that. You want those business to grow. And yeah, I'm proud of a lot of people. And yeah, I like helping people too. It's kind of your attitude when you go into something like this, that they'll let you hang around if you're helpful. And I'm not always in a good mood, but I try to be. I do try to walk the walk, and you expect more out of yourself than maybe others. And then I'm always delighted when people step forward and do well. And yeah, I think you guys, you and Terry, I still remember, I think it was in Illinois at a conference, and they had these farmers presenting, and the last one comes up and he says, I'm from Saskatchewan. And I'm there with all the Americans, right? And I'm like, oh, what, Saskatchewan down here in the Corn Belt? What the heck? And and he did such a nice job, and he was brave enough to go down and present in the middle of the Corn Belt to the Americans on, I think it was Precision Agriculture or something. Right after that, I stormed up and said, hey, Canadian, do the Canadian handshake. And so I knew you guys, probably from your parents, you were ambitious and had courage, right?
Oh, it was beat into us. And what I love about that story is Terry has unique ability in that crowd where he can physically get up on the stage and say simply, this is how I do it. And there's all kinds of exposition and conversation about how do you integrate this and that digital thing on your farm while he's physically can see, like he'll be down at these conferences and this is my wife, she's on the combine. I can Skype her or see where she's going or farm from the phone. And I know Rob Sake has always featured that because there's not that many guys that are farming yet from their phone, but we know that's going to be the world we live in. And we could probably get into some of that with the startups that you've been working with in the digital space that are super exciting.
I do screen people and I recognize innovators when I see them. And so Terry would be what I would classify, and you as well, you're innovators. And if there's 100 farmers or 1,000 farmers, there's a certain percentage that are curious and they're thinking about the next thing, and that they're willing to invest time and money, even though the outcome isn't totally sure, to try stuff, buy some new tech. You know, it didn't work, but didn't kill me, and I learned something from it, and maybe it leads to the next. I've always kind of defaulted to trying to meet those innovators. I still love other farmers. So, you know, my brother's a farmer and I would say he's innovative, but maybe not quite as innovative as others. I still like hanging around and hearing the story and meeting them and seeing how they overcame challenges too, because every farmer overcomes challenges.
That's got to be the exhausting pain point I've been thinking about a lot for a lot of farmers, is how much do you try? And then when you explode all your gunpowder on this exciting new development, then it doesn't pan out the way you want it. And I think it's an inherent issue for guys. And there's just, and now there's so much choice. You go to the store and there's 20 jams on the rack. You just leave and you didn't pick a jam because it's like, I can't even decide today. If you got one big jam at Costco and it's like a great price, boom, Bob's your uncle. Because this is literally the first thing in your LinkedIn bio. You're helping farmers by encouraging them with new technology. So how do you do that, Joe? If I'm a farmer, how do you get me excited about continuing to try out this shit?
Yeah, I think promoting people like Terry or other folks that are trying these things, and supporting those guys so that the neighbors see it, and then it becomes kind of trickle down. They had the first dot. Chuck at Haggerty Creek brought in the first farmer-owned dot autonomous farming in Ontario this spring. I went down and saw it and made sure I was tweeting the heck out of it and to help promote it. And he's happy because somebody cares. And there's lots of people giving him the gears too. But for me, it's, is this going to work? And he goes, yeah, this is where it's going. So he's willing to put his money where his mouth is and make things happen. You can support them a little bit on some of those things. And not everything is going to work, but an innovation strategy is never a bad strategy. It's if you don't think about these things or pay attention, you end up being disrupted or your costs are out of whack or something doesn't work. And I prefer to be kind of ahead than letting the marketplace determine my outcomes.
I'm surprised there hasn't been more uptake that, and I'm an iron guy, so I understand the psychology behind that nice shiny green paint. Trust me, I use it to my advantage in capitalism many a time. Mm-hmm. Not ashamed to say, but why are we more resistant than I thought we would be given all of the advantages that could potentially come from automating smaller machinery?
It's pretty revolutionary, right? And Deere and Case and Kloss and all those companies have done a pretty good job on being good at being farm equipment. So starting from scratch and reinventing like Norbert did over a tequila, I think he told me over a margarita in Mexico, is when he said he doodled out the original. He was just thinking big thoughts because they were probably asking him to make bigger and bigger Seedmaster equipment. And he's going, there's got to be a limit to this. And he just doodled out this concept. And then he had enough fortitude and resources to make it happen. And so sometimes innovation bubbles up from, Emerald Park, Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. not, Moline Deer headquarters. But Deer does a lot of other things well. And they're certainly one of the great companies in agriculture. But that shows there's room for innovative people and innovative ideas. And you can't expect the big players to dream up and execute on all the ideas of the world.
What's interesting about that dot is even as we speak, we could be spreading some biosolut with it, I understand. So applications are endless. And Norman exited very gracefully there. I thought he did a great job of completing the entrepreneurial life cycle in a very short cycle. And, it's handing off the baton to somebody that can carry it to the finish line. I think we as entrepreneurs have to recognize there's a natural flow and ebb. And at one meeting, somebody asked me if we're going to sell. I said, well, I'm not going to resist the most logical common sense source of direction here if I'm presented with a really large check. But
yeah,
it has to be sort of obvious and intellectually, you can't even deny it. Like in your businesses, they're still running. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you sell or exit? It's very, very sellable businesses. Why are you still in them?
That's a good question. I think, and I have sold some things in my lifetime. Maybe it's opportunity, maybe it's timing. So I've had a couple times in my career where somebody's come and said, I'd like to buy something and one of our businesses. And I've got a vision in my mind for where it can be and what I think it's worth. And a couple times I've said, thanks for the offer. I'm not even going to entertain it because it's worth more strategically to me than you can afford to pay for it today. And I think that's where you have a vision and you know where you want to take these things. So lots of opportunities.
Oh, man. Well, you're staring down the barrel of tens of opportunities, if not hundreds. when we get into the subject of where have you made someone else a hero? You made me feel like a hero in my own story. Now you're helping these startups, which has got to be highly invigorating, man. I know you're just hammering it out with all kinds of opportunities. Tell us how you got into that with some business partners and how that's going, what you guys are working on.
Yeah. So we saw a huge opportunity to support these early stage entrepreneurs just because they're inexperienced and we thought we could leverage our knowledge, our networks, our skill sets, and some financial resources to help them move forward. Because we got a lot of help from people when we got started. And so we also, parallel path to that, became big fans of Y Combinator out of Silicon Valley. And these folks, 15 years ago, had some exits, and you can just tell they love working with early stage founders. And they've invested in a couple thousand companies over the year. They go in first, they go in with some cash and lots of founder development programming. So just make them investor ready and help them with their planning and their products and human resources, all that human development stuff. And 15 years later, the number of businesses that they've still have rolling is 80% versus the norm of 10%. And the market capitalization of the companies they've invested in is over $100 billion. They invested in things that were a dumb idea, like Airbnb, Dropbox. One of their first ones was Reddit. Big billion-dollar, huge success stories. They're really good at sharing. You can find them on YouTube. You can just tell they like working with founders. We thought, hey, let's take that playbook and see if we can work on it locally here up in Canada and bring it to some agri-food where we know that if we get anything right, we're helping feed the world and helping farmers.
Did you get a chance to work with those guys themselves, or you just kind of looked at their model for them?
I haven't yet. We've talked to a few people that have been down there to visit with them and pitch their businesses. So we're getting closer. Yeah, there'll be a day when we go down and try to meet them.
Isn't agriculture sexy, much like the Silicon Valley complex, where there's a whole bunch of money sloshing around for the right things in the ag space?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're one of the sectors that just kept moving on through COVID. We've been disrupted a little bit, but for the most part, the sectors kept rolling and farmers kept farming and kept feeding the world. So I do think, and it's also pointed out to us that we need to do a better job of automating things, and not so much in cash crops, but some of these other intensive crops where everybody got sick, your field laborers all got sick. How do we automate some of the horticultural sectors and things like that? So I think there's going to be a lot of innovation coming in to our sector. And I think there's a lot of the neat things that are being invented that people aren't thinking, hey, how does that help the food supply chain and help farmers and help agribusiness? Sensors and machine learning and artificial intelligence and automation and robotics, things like that are being invented. You mentioned Tesla. He sent up the heaviest payload ever, and it was full of these small satellites for rural broadband internet. Elon Musk might be helping improve the internet in Western Canada, where we know that's an issue.
I had a farmer who was talking about that very system, and he was going to be on it. This was over the summer. And he said, I'm going to be able to get actually answer a call or have Wi-Fi anywhere. And he had a girlfriend. I forget where she was, but she's like overseas. And he was really excited about being connected all the time. But otherwise, he literally had to be in a certain spot, standing on top of a rock in a certain place in the field, hold the phone a certain way, and he might get a signal to call the guy when he needs a new belt or whatever. Like, it's crazy. And now it's not an option where you got, you know, time to go home and listen to your dial up and then go check a few things on Ask Jeeves. It's, you need the internet for everything that you do, the internet of things on the farm. It's such an opportunity, but also such a handicap if you don't have it.
We'll sort it out. It's just, you hate to be at a huge disadvantage for decades. Remember, your first cell phone was not very good, and now you, at least you can do a lot of stuff on it now. So the technology keeps advancing. It's just because it's a rural population and the tech is investment heavy, we need to just keep innovating, and it'll get there. Just think about the power of software and technology and you know, where it's been and where it's going. So the trend is unmistakable, but you don't want to be at a disadvantage to other competitors. And if you can't check your email for big parts of the day, that is disruptive and expensive.
So you're going to statistically guarantee companies a better survival rate with RH Accelerate. I love that. I love that. That would be great in a brochure, like 80% survival rate for new companies. Are you going to get there?
I don't know that we're guaranteeing it, but we're investing our time and our money mm-hmm. with that hope, and that we can help them grow and get some positive outcomes. You kind of are what you become, right? And more now than when you first decided, hey, I'm starting Eberhard Ag Solutions. Just even chatting with you before this, you're making decisions on human resources based on the last 2 or 3 years. And your probability of success keeps going up. You just have to survive and mature and develop as a business person as the business grows, and then bring your team along with you.
Right now, it's about doing less stupid things is actually more profitable, which actually involves doing less. It's hard to do less sometimes, I'm telling you. It's hard to do less.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these heroes that you're fostering, you're like Xavier and the X-Men or something. Who's the next big heroes, the next big technology, big exciting things that your superpowers you're excited about in the agricultural community?
We've made probably 15 investments in the last year, and we're looking at probably 15 or 20 companies right now. And I'm really excited by some of these young tech founders. They are so bright, hardworking, care. We've got a whole crop of them coming along. One of our success stories during COVID has been with a company called VidHug, and it's VidHug.com. And the founder there, he developed this really nice, simple web tool so that people could send video greeting cards. So happy birthday and happy wedding and anniversary and all those sort of things. He did it originally. He wanted to do it for his mother's birthday, and his family scattered all over the world. So he's a software guy. He did it himself, and he goes, maybe I should just program this and pop it up for others to use. And he's gone from a small hundreds of thousands of VidHugs being used a year ago to now it's millions and generating lots of sales, lots of growth. It was just one of those really good ideas that he executed on, and it's gone viral, and he's got multi-million dollar business there. He's up to 5 staff now, and we support him so that it's just not him trying to take on the world. He's got an advisory team, and we help him find staff and make some decisions. And just based on our experience, we can give him an opinion, but I want him to make the decisions and him to trust his gut. Think of sports. What do you have? The Brandon Wheat Kings near mm-hmm. you?
Absolutely.
So yep. Who's made the NHL from the Brandon Wheat Kings that 10 years ago was that scrawny kid that that you got? Oh, he needs to put some meat on and grow. Yeah, I'm sure you have him. I saw Mitch Marner when he was a London Knight at 15 or 16. And I thought, boy, he's going to get killed in junior hockey. And next thing I watch him on TV. So that's kind of the same process that we're working on with these founders.
It's funny that you say viral, because I don't know if you could invent something better for an airborne pandemic than a video VidHug thing.
Yeah.
Talk about timing.
It worked out for him.
Sometimes you get lucky, yeah, eh?
Worked out for him. Sometimes you get lucky.
Hard work meets luck. So good for them. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting for a farmer to be looking at the next thing that you could physically implement, say in 2021, which actually sounds like the future in itself, just saying 2021, what would you be looking
at?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, 2021. It's kind of like Back to the Future here. Back to the Future 6 or something. It was probably in there, 2021. What would you suggest a farmer should actually drill down and try and implement in 2021, if anything?
I think they know that answer. They can talk to their suppliers. They can read the Better Farming magazine, talk to guys like Terry, watch them, listen to your podcast. So what specifically will work on their farm? Something that'll save them money or make them money. And to be a little bit more innovative and aggressive on trying something new. There's a farmer that's been a customer of farms.com for 20 years down in Jewell, Iowa. And he put on Twitter the other day, he does one thing a year. He tries to do one kind of new thing a year. And just something simple like that. And so I texted back to him on Twitter. I'm sure it's not one thing, but it's all the one things that add up over 20 or 30 years. So I think just adopting that and trying to be a student, trying to make those continual quality improvements.
Yeah, if you had a bit of a program where you're trying one or a couple new things every year, and I've also heard from some pretty equitable farms trying something 3 years in a row to verify it's not a one-off statistically with some of these things. Although you take something like BioSol, it's just a given. Just trust us, it works.
It gets easier to trust you when you've got it over more acres, and you guys have been doing the homework. I saw you were doing the tissue testing and the soil testing, and the people know what the results are. So I think when your sample set gets to be over many years by, I don't know how many acres, but you told me once and it was a lot of acres, it's less new. And your confidence keeps growing the more you're there to help farmers, help them get more yield and help them have the nutrition program they need to optimize their yields. Yeah, don't be bashful. Nobody else is going to, pitch your stuff for you if you don't, right? And if you're not confident in it, find something else that you can be confident in.
Well, I think for us, the next phase was literally inspired by that A&L soil health test, where we can build a little bit of an academy, go on the journey with the producers, measure the carbon and the nutrients and the biological and chemical characteristics of the soil before and after, as well as our bank account, take it to yield. But I was pretty blown away when they took 427 different factors, narrowed it down to the 20 that mattered the most, and gave you the nice colorful graphs that you can read at the kitchen table on a Saturday morning and go, okay, what's moving the needle here? And I'm hoping we can start measuring carbon for the sole purpose of, in my humble opinion, if society really wants to cool planet Earth, we can do it via farmer soils, pay the farmer. It could be a great thing. And you see how important food security becomes. Like the very title in your Roundhouse Accelerator, Agri and Food Innovation, becomes so critical. Think of 2008. What happened in 2008? Commodities stuff of the stuff that you can hold on to. That's where to be, baby, when the shit hits the fan like we've just had. So it was great. I think it's been a good boost for everybody. You've seen grain flowing around the world and farmers are getting a little bit more respect. Our big why has become is, I think we can help farmers. I think we can help them navigate this new world of what society is expecting, the stories that they're telling themselves, right or wrong. Hey, let's work on this. Let's make some money. We're business people. We don't have to judge if it's always right. We have to ascertain, is there an economic opportunity here? And I believe, you know who said it? Did you see where Jimmy Pattison, 91, said it? It's the environment, it's the environment, it's the environment, stupid. Like the only business that's going to get done going forward in the future is the environment. And that's not our choice. But that's the world that we're navigating. We're in the boat and we're going down the rapids and the rocks are, if we don't get environmentally friendly as fast as freaking possible, we're going to be hitting the rocks. That's my opinion. So I think we can help. I think we can help with that actually substantially. So that's what's exciting for me. When you, just to wrap this up, when you think about Roundhouse Accelerator and maybe your own career and everything, storied as it has become, what has to have happened if we're having a show in a year or 3 years or 5 years? What has to have happened for it really to be a success for you, Joe?
I think for me, and it's probably like a lot of people, if I give it my best effort and I can look myself in the mirror and say I did my best, then, the results are the results. So I set a vision, I set some pretty aggressive, lofty goals, but the marketplace has to rise up to meet you from the other side and you have to have a bit of luck and so on. So I really just try to, improve my own performance, my own skills, find leverage and keep hustling. And as long as I'm happy with myself, then the results will be there and I can live with it.
So if there's somebody that is listening that has an idea, or sometimes it's just an idea, sometimes it's the beginning of actually coming to fruition. If you're to speak directly to a young founder about what you're doing, what would you say to them and how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn or Twitter or just Google and rhaccelerator.com. Yeah, I try to respond to every inbound. I mean, I have a lot of time for people, but I do try to help where I can. And yeah, if they're interested in being involved in some way, we're easy to get engagement with.
You also have the Better Farming magazine,
which Terry is one of those great authors in. And
but you're encouraging people to innovate on such a level they can read your magazine, they can listen to the Ready, Set, Grow podcast. And even though you're a big celebrity and a big successful entrepreneur, who knows what fancy kind of sports car you get to park in your garage at night or whatever, but you've never done any of those Ty Lopez videos yet. I haven't seen, I'm in my garage with it. You have the books, but you don't have the Lamborghini.
Yeah, no, I'm not a car guy.
No, but you like books, obviously. What's your favorite go-to book back there? What's your...
Yeah, I have lots of self-help ones that I like. I try to read a fair bit. And a lot of the entrepreneur operating systems. So I've been giving Rocket Fuel away to, what's that, Gino Wickman?
Mm-hmm.
You guys like EOS?
Love EOS.
So Gino Wickman. And
just hired an integrator that read the book twice at her previous job. Perfect. She was very bored.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, but that's good. That's what you need, is somebody to execute in behind. So yeah, I've been reading lots of stuff like that and just helping founders and things. I like lots of biographies. Read Elon Musk lately and Shoe Dogs, which was the Nike story, and stuff like that. That even those guys that have knocked it out of the park, they had a tough time. Being a farmer or an entrepreneur or a founder, it's hard. You're playing AAA hockey. So you got to get a helmet on, and it's fast and it's hard. And if you can stick with it, it's a great career.
Well, we all need people like you to help increase our odds of survival dramatically. And if we've done anything right over the years, it's had some amazing people help us. And it's pretty crazy too, when you bring somebody into your story and ask them to be your hero to you or help make you a hero. We've had amazing people that have elevated our game all the way along. And I really start thinking more too about how we can give back. And just before this call, I had an opportunity to help somebody else in their career. And that's the most gratifying thing, to have that ability and actually have some wisdom and tools to say, okay, man, I've been here. I've been where you're at. That's pretty crazy. So I can see where you're at. I can see where I'm at. I can see where they're at.
I enjoy talking to you and Terry, and I get satisfaction back too. It's not a one-way street. Appreciate the kind words, but I learn a lot from you guys and like what you're doing. Let's just go have fun and make things happen. And
we're going to kill it.
Have this chat in 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 10 years from now.
Well, hey, and don't you just feel like we're just getting started?
I know you guys, you know, you're away. Now it's, what are the pieces in the puzzle, and grow yourself and grow your team. So
you and me, both of us, you wake up with that same excitement every day. Like you're just getting started. You got so many things to be excited about. Yeah. You're having meetings all day long with new things. Like it really is entrepreneur's dream. And I kind of want to join you. I just got to kind of get the entrepreneurial life cycle completed here at least once, to my own credit.
Yeah, but we'll figure out more stuff we can work on together.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
If anybody wants to reach out to Joe, you can find him on the internet. You don't have to search very hard. And the man's got tendrils into everything. He's helping move agriculture forward in a big way. So good job. We appreciate it. You're a hero in my story, and you made a lot of other people into heroes in their own. So really appreciate you coming to the show.
No, you and Terry are my heroes. So we're good.
Appreciate it, man. Okay.
See you later.
Thanks so much. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did having that chat with Joe. And Terry and I have had some really great chats with Joe. He's been extremely supportive, and lots of times it's just giving you that encouragement to keep going when times get tough, and gaining that perspective that, you know, Joe's been in the game long enough that he can give you that outside perspective that really it's, you know, just getting on base one hit at a time, keep doing the things that work, you know, forget what didn't work and just keep going, because a lot of business is just not quitting. So it's really cool to see Joe helping a lot of different founders with RH Accelerator. That's a very intriguing concept, and we'll be keeping an eye on that. Keep in mind that Joe has his own podcast with RH Accelerator called Ready, Set, Grow, so you should check that out. And also, something, if you're a longtime listener, you might have noticed is that there's some new
production and a few new touches and nuances to the show this time around, which is really cool. We've brought on board some new producers. The name of their company is Pod Sound School, and it's Steven and Veronica and Augustine doing the editing and the production. So if you enjoyed those little touches, let me know. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me and my brother, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you can find Growing the Future Podcast on Instagram. But one of the really cool places to check out for past episodes and more content, different aspects of the show, is growingthefuturepodcast.ca. And there you can become a Growing the Future Podcast insider. We will send you updates when the show is published immediately and some of the other content that gets created around the show. I usually publish a little blog about my takeaways on LinkedIn, so you can connect with me there specifically about this episode and more. You can also, what else? Yeah, send us a note and I'll send you a t-shirt, man. Send us your size. So we appreciate you following the show. Check out eberhardagsolutions.ca. That's the company that Terry and I are partners in, distributing some really cool products for agricultural inputs. And you can check out eberhardfarms.com. That's the farm. You can check out suregrowsolutions.ca. That's the agronomy and research company. And there's also Convergence Growth, but I don't know that they have a website yet. We'll be coming shortly. So yeah, we're around, and drop us a line. Appreciate you listening. And thanks to Pod Sound School for the awesome production this time around. Looking forward to growing the show with them. And take care.